Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, joined by Shad Marquitz. We are your co-hosts for this weekend's edition. Also your host throughout the week as we are continuing to produce a lot of content focused on the metals, but then also ranging to, well, U.S. equity markets, the dollar currencies, as well as some cryptocurrency comments. Please keep all the emails coming. We love hearing from each and every one of you, and please go back through the week on our website, kereport.com, and listen to a lot of those company updates. We love hearing your feedback on the companies we're bringing on, either positive or negative on those companies. We learn a lot from each and every one of you. On this weekend show, we're going to really take a big picture look at markets, metals, and some of the other key sectors that we think everyone should be noting. We are kicking off the show with Mike Larson. He is the editor of the Safe Money Report. You can also follow Mike on Twitter at RealMikeLarson. Now, Mike, starting off with the U.S. equity markets. We are recording this quite late in the day on Wednesday, so we don't know where these markets are going to close, but we can already make the comment that this week has been volatile for the markets. Just on Wednesday today, the markets were down a little over 1% and then have recovered to positive territory. And if you go back just to the beginning of September, we have seen a general pullback in the U.S. equity markets. The S&P is down about 5 to 6%. The tech stocks, those are pulling back even more. Mike, what do you take away from this volatility we're seeing that started in September?
Yeah, we're in this pattern where we have a lot of just people running from one side of the boat to the other on any given day, right? I mean, you know, you're up 400 or 500 points in the Dow one day, you're down 300 or 400 points the next, and sometimes even intraday, you're swinging around by multiple hundreds of points. I think people are trying to suss out whether a couple of things are going to be worked out. In the first case, of course, there's the ongoing debate about the U.S. debt ceiling. You know, we seem to have this thing happen every, I don't know how many months, sometimes a year or two, depending on how fast the debt's rising. We get down to this thing where, you know, you get to a game of chicken where the Republicans say one thing, the Democrats say another, and they say that they're not going to come to a deal. Then the markets throw a hissy fit, and voila, they come to a deal because nobody wants their account sizes to get any smaller, including the people in charge of Congress. So, you know, it goes down to the wire, but they tend to work something out. And yet it still creates market volatility. So that's one force we've got acting out here right now. Obviously, the issues in China and what's going to happen with this kind of Evergrande saga, you know, is this real estate developer going to run into real trouble? I mean, it's already defaulted on a couple of bonds. Is that going to snowball, create more widespread losses? You know, what does that say about the strength of the Chinese economy and real estate being such a huge driver over there? Obviously, everything from, you know, governments making huge money from land sales. That's how they get a lot of revenue as opposed to taxes. They also, of course, building these, you know, multi-story buildings in the middle of nowhere by the dozens, by the you know, hundreds, whatever the numbers are. You know, that creates a lot of demand for everything from employment to commodities, things that go into those buildings. If that's going to start to slow down because China's cracking down, what does that mean for the commodities and sort of, you know, resources side of the business and the markets? And also, you just have questions about what's happening with liquidity. The Federal Reserve starting to take tentative baby steps towards draining some liquidity, you know, maybe tapering bond buying and then eventually raising rates. People are concerned about that because there's a possibility that happens before the end of the year. At least the decision to actually do that, and then the unwinding begins, whatever, December or early next year. If that happens, I mean, it ends this sort of never-ending money pump into the market. So that's another factor that's driving it. It also tends to be, you know, any talk about draining dollar liquidity, excess liquidity, makes the dollar a little more valuable, a little more scarce. So you're seeing the dollar rise in value here. And that's also, again, tends to be a negative for particular sectors, things like commodities. And of course, as you mentioned, technology, which was a key driver of the market and is highly overweighted in things like the S&P 500, the benchmark, you know, the top five U.S. tech stocks, these multi-trillion dollar tech stocks, have a very large weighting in the S&P. So when tech pulls back, it drags the broader averages down as well. And tech is particularly vulnerable to any thought of interest rates rising down the road. It just sort of results in the future cash flows being discounted back at a, you know, making them have a lower value in the here and now. So long story short, all those factors, interest rates, concern about China and the real estate situation over there, plus a rising dollar, plus uncertainty about the debt ceiling, all that thrown into the soup is what's behind this correction. So I think a lot of things are going to have to work themselves out in the next few weeks before people have the confidence to say, you know what, it's been a great year. Instead of taking some chips off the table, I'm going to try and see if I can tack on a few more points by December 31st. For people to be willing to do that, they're going to want to see some clarity on these issues. And I think that's what's behind this correction and this volatility, again, this uncertainty we've seen creep back into the markets for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, Mike, as you mentioned, it's a very interesting soup indeed of all these different ingredients coming together. And it seems like almost every market is at a key inflection point, whether it's the dollar getting close to breaking out above that 94 resistance, whether it's the general markets, not just the S&P, but also the NASDAQ heavily weighted to tech, getting below their 50-day moving averages and getting closer to breaking down. The commodity sector is a key point. Everything seems to be at this tipping point. My question is, do you think that that some of this volatility is really not going to be resolved by the Fed as they continue to punt things down the road? Because when they see that this kind of market slowdown is happening while there's a slowdown in growth, they could easily punt at the November meeting. And what do you think that would do if they said, hey, we're going to wait till next year to figure this out and even punt the rate hikes from the end of 2022 into 2023? What kind of effect do you think that would have if they kicked the can down the road?
Yeah, I mean, I think this Fed, even more so, which is amazing to say it, even more so than the Yellen Fed or the Bernanke Fed before it, doesn't want to be the bad guy at the table, doesn't want to be the proverbial punch bowl stealer at the party. And I think that if anything, you know, I think the Fed is probably eyeing some of what's going on here, some of this uncertainty, some of this volatility, and some of these markets that you mentioned being at key levels. If anything starts to really break, I think the Fed is gonna be extremely worried. I don't know if I'd use the word panic, but I think that if things do go from being sort of sideways and volatile and jumping around like an EKG to something where you're seeing significant breakdowns or breakouts to the upside in the dollar, breakdown significant to the downside in the S&P, you know, breakout in yields, breakdown in bond prices, all that. I think that if you do see those types of things happen, then yes, the Fed is probably going to react by saying, all right, hold on, you know, let's just, you know, regroup in 2022. And maybe that sets us up for a year-end rally. So there are a lot of variables floating around out there. I mean, you know, I think when it comes to practical advice for investors, I've tried to say, look, we're going to take some things off the table. I mean, we sold down some things in the Safe Money Report that had a mix of pretty decent gains and then one or two small hits. But it was like, let's just raise some cash. You know, let's do what a lot of other people are doing, because I think it's a smart risk management move just to see how this sorts out. You know, it's again, that's the first time after being pretty aggressive for a long time. I'm not outright selling the heck out of everything. I'm not moving a bunch of money to cash. I'm not, you know, hedging aggressively or trying to profit big time from downside moves. But I do think that, you know, it has made sense to kind of take some chips off the table and reassess and see what happens. Especially, I mean, we all know September and October especially are lousy months for the market. I mean, there's been significant pullbacks, corrections, obviously even a few crashes here and there. I don't think that, you know, the C word, the crash word is something I'm looking for. But I do think that, you know, you have that seasonality that's in the back of people's minds too. And again, it just makes investors, professional or individual investors, just kind of say, look, you know, it's been a great year. I think I'm just going to take some money off the table and just sort of see how things shake out.
Well, and that's a key thing to understand too, right, is that the markets at the peak for the S&P was already up about 20%, a little over 20% for the year already. And even after this pullback, still up around 16%. So maybe some traders just locking in some of their gains early. Mike, real quick here, I don't particularly think this matters for the market outside of the noise that it's making, but the debt ceiling debate, do you think it matters for the markets?
You know, I don't think beyond the short term. I mean, again, with the exception of 2011, when Obama and Boehner really let things go down to the wire and the Dow dropped, a couple thousand points in the span of four or five or six or seven sessions, which, you know, that lesson, I think, really spooked Congress, spooked both the Republicans and the Democrats, and showed that if you try and push this gamesmanship too far to score political points, you know, you're going to get poor, your constituents are going to get poor, and you're going to have a hard time explaining why you did that to them, you know, around election time. So I think that that was an object lesson that ever since then, it really has drained the willingness of, again, either Republicans or Democrats to take a principled stand and say, I'm going to put my foot down and I'm not going to, you know, they'll bluster, they'll position for it and everything, but ultimately they're going to cave because they don't want to see that happen. And they've seen what happens when you do try and push things too far. You know, yes, that was 10 years ago, but I still think people have that, you know, it's recent enough that the memory and the understanding of what really happens if you let the gamesmanship get too close or too down to the wire, what's going to happen then? So I think that ultimately it's an issue for the next few days. It's been an issue for the last couple of weeks. But I think, you know, this is going to get resolved and it's not going to be an issue past October for sure.
Yeah, Mike, agreed. It ends up just being political theater and they always end up raising it. So it doesn't matter. Even if they shut down the government like they did that one time, they always end up raising it. They increase their credit card balance. So I'd like to move over to what we're seeing in energy, you know, and the commodity sector. Most of the commodity sector has been under pressure, as noted, from the stronger dollar and some of the China disruptions and growth. But there's one area that's really been leading the pack, and that's oil, gas, nat gas. It's been surging higher, and that puts inflationary pressures on the market. So what do you make of the move in oil? Is it getting overdone here? And how do you think that may impact the markets and just the general ability for consumers to go out and spend as they're getting taxed at the gas pump?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny when you think about it that there's been such a move to try and be more progressive, the sort of green tendencies in the political arena and in the economy or in the markets with so much ESG focus and so on. Everybody wants to have a cleaner economy, cleaner energy, you know, less fossil fuels and so on. In a twist of fate, what seems to be the strongest part of the market lately? It's all the companies that, you know, that drill for oil, produce gas and so on. And you're obviously seeing the impact on prices from some of this policy and from some of the demand and supply issues out there. So in any event, it creates issues for inflation. It does make the sector more investable after a long period where, you know, energy dramatically underperformed. So I think you definitely want to have some exposure there as an investor. For the Fed, I mean, let's be honest, they're going to just kind of make excuses for it, just like they've been doing for everything else. I mean, you know, oh, there's inflation that's partially caused by semiconductors. Well, that's transitory. Oh, there's inflation, you know, temporarily, quote unquote, caused by supply issues in the European gas market and, you know, demand issues elsewhere. Oh, that's all temporary, too. I mean, they're just going to keep calling everything temporary and transitory and refuse to address it and blame it on supply related issues versus demand and so on. So I don't think it changes the policy approach unless, you know, it really does have that sort of demand shock or economic growth shock impact. I mean, if anything, if you go back to sort of that 2008 period when oil went ballistic, got up to almost 150 U.S. dollars per barrel, you know, what was the Fed's reaction? That was in the midst of a unfolding housing crisis and, you know, real economic meltdown. So the Fed didn't worry about the inflationary impact. They said, oh, well, this is just another reason the economy is going to slow. You know, you can come up with any sort of verbal justification or thesis to support your position. If your position is that you never want to raise rates or you want to push it out as far as possible and you're worried about the markets getting upset, the Fed's just going to not focus on the inflationary impact. They're going to say, oh, people have to pay too much for gas. They're going to spend less money elsewhere. Just another reason we have to kick the can down the road. If anything, that's how I think they would react.
So, Mike, what do you take away from the general commodities complex? The CRB index does continue to rise, but you look outside of energy and uranium, which has been going up. I think that's a whole other story why that's going up. But all the other commodities seem fairly flat, or at least the metals. You look at precious metals, those are pretty flat. Base metals seem to have put in at least a top for most of this year. What do you think, Mike? What's this telling us about the overall environment here where it really is just energy moving higher?
You know, again, in sort of Wall Street, you know, jargon, I think a lot of things are simply a hold. I don't think there's a lot of reasons to sell precious metals here. I don't think there's a lot of reasons to sell base metals and miners aggressively or anything like that. You know, it is still kind of I'd love for it to be more exciting and tell you we're right on the cusp of something big. But it is really kind of this holding pattern environment. You know, what's going to happen in China? Are they going to stop building as many buildings, which means less concrete, less, you know, steel, less copper, and on, or are they going to just keep their growth engine going by throwing more money at that sector? Here in the U.S., what's going to happen, you know, with some of these things like interest rates? Is that kind of, are they going to spike? Is inflation going to be an issue? And therefore, slow sectors like housing and slow economic growth overall. You know, there's so many unanswered questions, and I think that that's why you're seeing those markets just continue to tread water, and in some cases, you know, lose value, but not crash or collapse or anything, but sort of bleed a little bit of value month in and month out and sort of a corrective pattern. And, you know, I keep looking for that catalyst that's going to break us out of this. Once I see something both technically and fundamentally to get more aggressive, then I will. But I, you know, again, I don't think it's a clarion call to sell everything, but it's also, you know, not something we're going to beat the table and or you know, beat the drums to buy everything either.
Well, Mike, just one more on commodities and inflation and how they all kind of tie together. Generally, in an inflationary periods, we'll see a weaker dollar where the commodities will move up. And we're also have seen quite a bit of wage pressure and labor, you know, there's a lot of labor participation issues where businesses are having a hard time staying staffed up. So they're having to increase raises and wages. And as a result, we usually see cost-pushed inflation, and that'll drag the commodities higher and the cost inputs for companies higher. But we're seeing a really weird environment where we're seeing slowing growth, rising wages, but the actual dollar strengthening into all this because of some of the fear. And so it's actually pressuring commodities. What do you think will move first, the chicken or the egg? Will it be that the dollar breaks out and starts a deflationary period? Or do you think the dollar will roll over and allow commodities to spread their wings a bit, especially in tandem with some of these proposed infrastructure bills? What do you make of this strange environment we're in?
I think that a lot of it just goes down to simple liquidity. I mean, you're going from having an environment where the Fed's, you know, is in a never-ending printing mode and a never-ending supportive mode, and you know, is trying to actively devalue the dollar as well as stimulate asset prices and so on. And, you know, that switch has been flipped in the last several weeks, last few months, and you can see that impact on the dollar. So I think what would be needed to sort of short-circuit this dollar rally and give commodities a broader-based boost, especially in things like precious metals, is for the Fed to do kind of what you mentioned earlier, see some of what's going on and decide to kick the can or change the narrative or just in general stop talking tough and be like, you know what, we don't want to create any chaos. We're going to just kind of go back to the sidelines and push this thing out, this tapering out even further. So it really, because you can even look at something like happened in the last few days, a couple of the central banks that have moved, the Bank of New Zealand, for example, raised interest rates, and what happened? The New Zealand dollar tanked against the U.S. dollar, which is the exact opposite of what the textbook tells you should happen. I think that's an illustration that it really boils down to the 800-pound gorilla being the U.S. Fed and what their outlook is. So if they get back into that you know, let's pump more liquidity in approach, then I think the dollar gives up on this rally, and you see more broad-based commodity inflation. But it's going to take something to trigger that Fed action. And I think that's why this volatility is very worth watching. If we do see some of those moves start to accelerate, you get fast moves in multiple markets, that's going to spook the Fed. They kick the can down the road, and then you're talking about higher gold, higher silver, and some more supportive action in commodities.
Well, that's the thing, right, is that the Fed can talk tough all they want, but we all know how quickly they can reverse course and pump some more money into the system. And remember, they haven't even really started unwinding, tapering, or even raising rates. So we are stuck still in this limbo, but undoubtedly the Fed is watching the markets most closely. Mike, just as we wrap up here, then, what are you watching most closely? What matters the most to your portfolio, to what you're sharing with subscribers, as we are now in the fourth quarter after what has been three strong quarters for the markets, but still a lot of question marks around the economic restart and even where inflation's going?
It's going to have to be whether, you know, how we market tack at these key levels, these key potential breakout, you know, reversal type levels. Investors for many, 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 many months have gotten sort of conditioned to buy every dip, you know, that we're going to hit those moving averages and bounce and then continue to rally to new highs, that we're going to hold those breakdown levels as opposed to, you know, plunge through them. So I'm just basically watching a lot of some of the same levels you've mentioned. And then depending on how the market behave, if we do show a convincing sort of reversal back to the upside, we do see a breakdown, then that's going to trigger either more selling on my part or some more aggressive buying for year-end rally. So I'm kind of trying to sit on my hands a little bit here and let the market tip its hand.
All right, Mike, we'll wrap it up here. Thanks for sharing your thoughts kind of broadly, encompassing what the markets have been doing and really what matters. Unfortunately, it is still a lot on the Fed, but one thing we do need to remember too is that the Fed, again, can switch course, but boy, oh boy, it's been a real focus on U.S. equities and more of a risk-on approach, it seems like. But recently, that's changed a little bit.
All I would say is one last parting word. Sometimes the best thing to do is just sit tight and sit on your hands. I mean, you know, don't force anything. And I think that's kind of the environment we're in here.
Absolutely. I think that does make the most sense right now. And It actually goes back to what Dana Lyons has been saying. This is a market that you try to hit singles, not home runs in. Mike, great chatting with you as always, buddy. We'll chat again in another couple of weeks. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you. Take care.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.